This program is brought to you by Fresh FM.
Hello, and welcome back to another series of Top Writers. I'm Galen Pound, and in a few moments I'll be talking to freelance writer Fiona Summerfield. Her work has appeared in daily newspapers, trade and children's magazines, educational science web content, and scripts for a children's educational program. Fiona also has had a short story published on the American site Metro Moms and was commissioned to write a comedy short film script for high school students. In 2013, she was shortlisted for the Kobo New Zealand Authors e-publishing prize and last year was awarded a complete manuscript assessment by the New Zealand Society of Authors. As well as her writing, Fiona works full-time as a marketing services manager at NMIT. But first, we're going to hear from Dana.
This is Dana Wensley, and you're listening to Top Writers. I want to take a few moments to talk about freedom of speech. I'm the freedom of speech spokesperson for PEN in New Zealand. PEN is an international organisation that promotes literature and freedom of speech. Defending freedom of speech is not easy when faced with those who use it to disseminate hatred and racism. I last tackled this subject following the attacks in Paris at Charlie Hebdo in January 2015, when a fracas broke out between prominent Man Booker Prize winners Salman Rushdie and Michael Ondaatje over whether the satirical publication of Charlie Hebdo should be honoured at the PEN Annual Gala in New York. If you want to find out more about Charlie Hebdo and freedom of speech, see an article I wrote in the New Zealand Author in 2015 called Freedom of Speech After Charlie Hebdo. A few weeks ago, on the 12th of August, a group of white supremacists held a rally at Charlottesville in the United States. There followed a horrific attack on a crowd of counter-protesters, resulting in the death of a 32-year-old woman. PEN America has issued a statement that affirms the right to assemble peacefully, but deplores the message of hate spread by white nationalist groups. In its statement, PEN America calls on leaders to condemn the rise of hate speech and reflects that the right to free speech does not require anyone to condone their message to stay silent as they spread it. PEN has put together a reading list featuring writing that reflects and comments on the Charlottesville protest and its implications on free speech. You can read this writing on pen.org.readinglist for Charlottesville. The history of PEN is peppered with names of writers imprisoned or persecuted for their work. Names like Eno Mayamesi, Salman Rushdie, Aaron Atterbeck, Rafe Badawai, and Nobel Prize winner Liu Xiaobo, who died last month after spending the last 8 years of his life in prison in northeast China, ring out in the history of PEN. Their stories serve as a chilling reminder for us to be vigilant about ongoing attempts to limit free speech. But freedom of speech affects more than writers. It affects the public. It affects those that protest and those that counter-protest. It goes to the very heart of who we are in Western democratic countries and the democracy we stand for. I want to leave you with a quote from PEN America, commenting on the obligations on all of us to speak out when faced with hate speech. When a group steps out in the public square to spew hateful slogans, they have an obligation to understand the impact of their words and to take measures to mitigate the risk of violence. The leaders of today's march failed abysmally in their duty to urgently and publicly call on all their supporters, whether organised or not, to reject violence. PEN is interested in a wide range of issues relating to freedom of speech and how it affects our democratic rights. Hate speech is just one of those issues we look at. If you want to find out more about what PEN does and how you can be involved, follow the links on the New Zealand Society of Authors website to PEN or contact me, Dana Wensley, at pen@nzauthors.org.nz.
I'm Galen Pound, and you're listening to Top Writers. My guest today is freelance writer Fiona Summerfield. Welcome to Top Writers, Fiona.
Thank you.
Right, you started writing as a child and attended the first Young Authors Conference in 1985. But when did you first decide to call yourself a writer?
Thanks, Galen. Interestingly, it probably wasn't until I shifted to Nelson, which was at the end of 2012, and I joined the New Zealand Society of Authors, and I was at a Top of the South writers event, and I was talking to a partner of one of the other writers who asked when my novel had been printed, and when I said that I didn't have a novel and wasn't intending to write one, they seemed very disappointed, and that made me think. And I thought about all those different types of writing I've done, plays, TV, scripts, and had printed in numerous publications, and how actually I've been paid for all the hours that I did on those pieces, and how that's not really true when you try to write a novel. And that's when I decided, actually, I should be proud that I am a writer and that I love nonfiction and that I wasn't planning to write a novel anytime soon. And so I decided to call myself a writer.
How would you define a writer?
I think if writing gives you pleasure, you're a writer. We all wear many hats. And many writers hold down other jobs, so I think it's broader than just those who do it as an occupation.
Now, why do you personally write?
I write to give people a new perspective. I like to give them something to think about or so they can learn something new, and it's those pieces of writing, when I've achieved that I consider my most successful pieces. And sometimes I don't think there has to be a large audience. Two of my favourites was a couple of opinion pieces we did for the press, me and my friend Reina, and we both had similar backgrounds, but she's Māori and I'm Pākehā, and we described our growing up, and that got a lot of response from strangers and members of the public who said it really hit them and made them think differently. And the other one, which I remember very fondly, was one I did actually while working at the University of Canterbury, and it was a Sri Lankan woman who was an amazing student. She had just achieved her PhD in audiology, and she had been groundbreaking in the area of audiology in Sri Lanka, but because her parents wanted her to be a medical doctor and she wasn't that, they didn't actually recognise the amazing work she had done. And I wrote the article on about her. It was published, and when her parents read it, she came back and told me that they rang her up and they were crying, and they just said, "I'm so sorry that we didn't support you through all your studies and your work." And they've framed it and put it on their wall. And that, to me, is like successful writing. It's made them think differently.
That's really cool. Now, your work covers a lot of genres, from film scripts, TV scripts, magazine articles, short story, fiction, and non-fiction. Ooh. What is your favourite genre and why?
I think you can probably see by that list. I love variety. And I do love trying different genres. I do love script writing particularly, because it's really fun to see someone else saying what you've written and how if that's worked. But definitely overall nonfiction is my favourite, and probably stories about other people, whether it's their own experience or whether it's work that they've been doing. And I find people are so interesting and have had so many interesting experiences. One of my ongoing projects is interviewing women, older women, who have a faith and sort of finding out why. And one of these older ladies told me about the time she was prison visiting and ended up befriending a transgender prisoner. And he asked her to buy him woman's underwear from the warehouse. And I think in our society, we're very quick to dismiss our elderly women. And yet their stories are just fantastic.
It sounds so interesting. Now, the first piece you've chosen to read for us today is one of your Flash Frontier short stories. Before you read it, could you just please explain what a Flash Frontier short story is?
So Flash Frontier is an online publication. It's a New Zealand site, started in 2012, but they also now take international stories, and they publish bi-monthly under themes. So it is a flash fiction, which is very short fiction. So in this case, only 250 words. And I find that style of writing really good discipline. It keeps you to tight writing and makes every word count. And I find things like this, when there's themes and deadlines, that it just helps you keep writing and finish a piece. So this one was for the theme of whispers, and it's called Fighting the Voice. The patchwork of colourful suburban shop fronts finished with the post shop, guaranteeing frequent foot traffic.
"There's no one out there," whispered the voice.
Sam pushed back the glass door and wedged a wad of cupcake cases to hold it open. The fresh cakes lined up, ready for inspection. Sam climbed her unfamiliar position behind the counter to wait.
"Will they come? Your prices are too high," the voice whispered.
They did come, and the FPOS registered their delight.
"But will they buy tomorrow and the next day?"
It was variable. Balancing cake numbers was complicated.
"You're not making a profit yet. You'll never make a profit."
Sam dragged out the flour and flicked up the mixer through winter storms. Curtains of raindrops looked threadbare from the shop window, but appeared impassable to cake buyers. The landlord still called. She piped icing through spring and scraped together the rent.
"You can't control the weather. You'll never make a reliable income."
Her business mentor didn't agree and said profit will come last. Hang in there. But the voice had deeper access than the business mentor. On a Friday, Sam told the voice to shut up.
"Not me, the shop."
Sam sifted flour and cracked eggs. The mixer screamed, and the voice stopped whispering. "What are you doing?" It roared over the mixer. Sam pushed the cases out from under the door. It swung shut behind her. She set up a table under the sunshine and gave cakes away for free.
That's great. For me, writing that should paint a picture with words. And it's really interesting with the limited number of words you've got that you can actually still achieve that. The second piece you've chosen is from an article you wrote for an Australian children's science magazine. How did that come about?
This was when I was working at the University of Canterbury. And yes, it's entirely different to flash fiction. And it came about because I was talking to a scientist about her work in jumping spiders. And it was just so interesting. And a colleague had already told me about this magazine, The Helix, that's in Australia. And so I got in touch with the editor and they liked the story. So they ran it. And it's called Counting Spiders. Portia sounds like the car name, Porsche. Like the car, this species of jumping spider is top of the class. They may be able to count. The spider's funny appearance and choppy, stilted way of walking mimics bits of dead leaf moving in the wind, helping them to blend into their environment. Dr. Zamina Nelson at the University of Canterbury, New Zealand, studies jumping spiders and wanted to know if Portia was clever enough to count. "Counting is quite complicated," said Zamina. "It's difficult to make a counting test in the natural setting that is relevant to the spider." That relevant setting was a hunting scenario. Young jumping spiders sometimes work in teams to hunt other spiders, sharing the meal afterwards. Using preserved spiders, set up in different scenes, the scientists tested what number of spiders enticed a live spider to join in the hunt. Zamina found that test spiders settled near the prey most often when only one other Portia was nearby. They also settled more often if two spiders were nearby than if there were three. This seems to be an example of proto-counting, which human infants can do. This test spider could also tell the difference between one and two preserved spiders, regardless of whether the other spiders were large or small. So it seems like size doesn't matter. Whether Portia actually counts the other spiders, like we do, is still a mystery.
It's so funny. Sorry. Right, listening to those two pieces, what strikes me is the different type of language used. How important do you think that the choice of language used is crucial to the success of a piece of writing?
Yeah, I think language choice and style of writing is incredibly important to a piece. In that first piece, you couldn't see it, obviously, because we're on the radio, but it's written, the voice in the head is written in italics. And I think you have to have that language and the style to match with your readers. And so when doing writing for many different publications, like I do, it's something to be constantly thinking about. And often it also, I find, relates to the grammar too. And I'm not a grammar critic. And it's because, well, many people don't like to think so. I think a lot of it is subjective and down to the style of the publication, and it's constantly changing. And I think being an editor in that sense really helps your writing. I've done that a couple of times for two completely different publications. And seeing other people's writing styles and how they choose to phrase something or explain it, I think it definitely helps your own writing to grow and develop.
Now, last year, the New Zealand Society of Authors awarded you a complete manuscript assessment for the novel you're writing. How's that helped you?
So this, again, is a non-fiction novel. And I just knew that there was something that wasn't right with it. And I'd been reworking it and redrafting it. And it didn't feel like it was really helping. And the manuscript assessment just gives you that completely fresh set of eyes. They're seeing the manuscript completely cold. And she pulled out the issues that I couldn't voice, but I just knew were there. So when I got it back, it was that real, aha, yes, this is the problem that I couldn't see. And so it was also, there was a number of encouraging comments, so that was really helpful. Now I just have to complete the rewrite based on those comments, which is the hard bit.
Right. Now, of course, the complete manuscript assessment, so many are offered each year through the New Zealand Society of Authors. So just to have won one of those free assessments is something pretty amazing.
It is, and I definitely encourage people to apply for it. I think last year 60 people applied and they gave out 12 or 13, but it's just so worth it. It is well worth belonging to the New Zealand Society of Authors and taking up these opportunities.
And another thing they've got going at the moment is for unpublished novels. So if anybody has an unpublished novel out there, just go onto the New Zealand Society of Authors website and the details are all there. Now, why do you think so many writers see having a novel published as a holy grail when there are so many other aspects to writing which are often more financially lucrative?
Well, it's probably ego, I think, to have a whole book with your name on it. That's pretty cool. And it's possibly because they are the writers that society upholds, the book authors. But I do love that these days we are recognising more variety, especially TV writers are now getting known by name. And I think that's really neat because they're very clever. And I think people don't necessarily appreciate all the different writers through the publications they come across. I mean, there's technical writers that we might come across in our work and scientists who do a great deal of writing and they publish papers. So there's many different types.
Now, an essay you wrote has recently appeared in Scientific Sleuthing. Can you please tell us about that? And Scientific Sleuthing is a science magazine or...?
So this Scientific Sleuthing was recently launched in Christchurch and it's a collection of stories about our amazing New Zealand chemists and biochemists. The New Zealand Institute of Chemistry has been heavily involved in its creation and it was because I was at one point the managing co-editor of their magazine, Chemistry in New Zealand, and for one of the stories they needed a writer and so they asked if I could help out, and I did. And again, it was a great story of New Zealand scientists doing something that's unique in the world. And so it's really neat to be able to tell that story.
Now, the song you've chosen today is I Could Have Been Einstein by Butterfly Pig. What does the song mean to you?
This song, it talks a lot about excuses. And I find as a writer, it's easy to make excuses. And I don't get around to writing or I do something else. And then I do it and I sit down and I work on what I'm working on and it always makes me feel so much better and I wonder why I bothered to put it off. And so that's, for me, the words of the song are very clever as well and I appreciate the writing of it as well as the idea that we shouldn't make excuses and just should crack on and write.
Right, this is I Could Have Been Einstein by the Butterfly Pig.
Could have been Einstein, but I couldn't get a word in edgeways. Could have word in edgeways, and you told me I was being obtuse. I could have solved the mystery of quantum mechanics. I booked a meeting with Heisenberg, but he's a hard man to pin down. These excuses are piling up. These excuses are clogging my tongue. I could have split the atom but I couldn't find the hammer. Lost on the occasional table I use periodically. I could have been Bradman, but I didn't have a golf ball. Why would I have a golf ball when nobody's playing golf? These excuses are piling up. These excuses are clogging my tongue. These excuses are piling up. I have excuses for Africa and Ukraine and Syria. A number of countries going through turmoil. I tried to use alchemy to turn a corner financially. In hindsight, alchemy is something of a cul-de-sac. It could have been Einstein, but I couldn't get a word in edgeways. If I got a word in edgeways, you would tell me I was being obtuse. These excuses are piling up. Explanations. These excuses are clogging my tongue. I could have been.
I'm Galen Pound, and you've been listening to Top Writers. Thank you so much, Fiona, for taking time out of your busy day and talking with us about your very, very interesting and busy life. A podcast of this and previous programs, upcoming events, and information about Top Writers can be found on www.topwriters.co.nz.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project. Cheers, New Zealand On Air.